So the topic of the night is allyship, a process, not a destination. So James, what does allyship look like specifically for you?
Allyship to me means a couple of things. A couple of things that I've been working with specifically is not only trying to seek out information, but seek out scholarship from marginalized communities, seeking out voices, specifically with the situation right now of the targeting of Black and brown people, making sure that I am tuning into Black scholarship and elevating their voices is an important part of that. I have a couple of people that I wanted to elevate their voice and kind of let you know of. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. She's on Twitter. Go ahead and give her a follow. She's been doing an excellent seminar under the Black Light where she's been talking about the intersection of the COVID-19 virus and race, but then also with the George Floyd protest against police brutality, really highlighting that aspect of racial inequality as well. So I definitely wanted to make sure to elevate that and to promote that. That is a part of that.
Education.
Of my allyship is education, listening, and promotion. I'm focusing that center away from myself and providing that spotlight onto the individuals that are being marginalized. So utilizing the privilege that I have to give that megaphone and that voice to people that aren't exactly heard, particularly within academia, but then in the conversation in general.
So it's all about giving the floor.
And just reallocating that space for the proper people. And I mentioned education. Educating myself, because there's a lot of things that as a white person that I don't know. There's a lot of context. I like that you talked with Chadwick specifically about the historical context, and a lot of that stuff is new information to a lot of people within the white community specifically that they've never heard of. They've never heard of somebody like Emmett Till. They've never heard that story told. And I think it's important to understand those and understand that context in order to be an adequate ally, to understand why there's these protests and these unrest. I think it was Martin Luther King that said that justice delayed is justice denied, and that this is a problem that's been ongoing for generations and generations, and understanding that historical lineages is definitely a part of that, and educating myself.
So James, a lot of people in the white community are feeling very overwhelmed right now. I think a lot of them are waking up finally to the reality of racism. So what advice would you give to your fellow white allies who are feeling this sense of, wow, what have I been doing this whole time?
I think that a lot of the historical context of things such as we mentioned Emmett Till as a prime example of this undercurrent of racial injustice that's been going on in this country that we as white people haven't experienced, we haven't known about. With something like George Floyd and the increased salience of police brutality that's being confronted now, it's almost like a situation when you're a kid and you find out the tooth fairy is your parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That immediately this thing that you've believed for so long, this lie that you've been told for so long, is suddenly untrue. The things in society that you've been conditioned to believe, the police are always on your side, and now you see that's a lie. It's kind of jarring. It's almost like as though white people right now, including myself, are experiencing a little bit of cognitive dissonance. It's, I've always been conditioned to believe this is reality, but now I'm confronted with a reality that I've never known. And so it's a flooding of that, and it's a flooding of information. And I think that translates into this overwhelmed feeling of, I have to take in all this information. I have to digest all of this in a manner that makes sense to me, but then also show the individuals in society that have been marginalized that I stand with them. But how do you do that if you've never been part of the conversation? You want them to know that, hey, look, I'm doing my part. I'm taking all this information in. I'm with you. I see the injustice. You want them to finally feel comfortable in that fact, which then often ends up translating into, unfortunately, performative action, that you don't quite know how to be an ally. And so because of that, it translates into, hey, I know these things that you've been dealing with now for generations. And that's the extent of it. It's not supporting specific policies. It's not showing up when you need to show up. And so my sort of recommendation for the white community to engage with these issues is that allyship is a constant process of learning, failure, and growth. It's a process of learning that, again, you're taking in all this information at rapid speeds. You're basically being caught up on hundreds of years of history and context and racial injustice in a matter of days. You're constantly going to learn things you didn't know and listen to people you've never listened to and get that context. You're going to fail inevitably at being a good ally. You're going to fail at this process because being an ally means being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And when we get uncomfortable, we make mistakes because we don't know everything. It's knowing that part of having privilege is that not only there is a responsibility of elevating others' voices, but understanding that we're prone to fail in that regard. It's how do you make room for people that you didn't even know had a problem with being heard?
It's a messy, messy process. It's a nonlinear process. There is no time when you can check the box and say, I did enough and I'm now a good ally, and you get a gold medal and a sticker. It doesn't exist. It's going to be an ongoing battle with yourself. Every day you wake up, you will have to have that conversation. What am I going to do today? How am I going to deal with these feelings? What is my role? And as you said, success and failure, it's all intertwined. The point is to try.
To try, but then it's easy to slide into the sort of thinking that because the work that you're having to do to be an ally is so difficult, that it's easy to focus on the difficult. And what that ends up doing is it's drawing attention away from the people you're trying to help. It's, oh, look, I'm doing all this work. It's so hard. But then an important part of allyship is then taking that aspect of the difficulty and refocusing that perspective and refocusing that spotlight on those that are marginalized in the first place. It's about them. The difficulty that they're experiencing will always be more important than the difficulty you face in learning these issues and growing as an ally.
You know, a bunch of celebrities had put up a bunch of videos on Twitter and they were like, I'm complicit. I take responsibility for not doing enough about racism or X, Y, and Z. And as a brown person, my initial reaction was, unless you're giving the floor to a brown or black person and sharing their struggle, you can cope with your feelings with a counselor. You can talk through your feelings with your family and friends. That's what we do all the time, right? So if you have a platform, don't waste your platform by assuaging your own guilt.
Yeah, I saw that video too, and I cringed a little. It's obviously well-intentioned. Again, you're now faced with the unfortunate reality that many black and brown people within this country face, this prejudice that you've never known exists. And it's this trying to get the black community to see that you are on their side. That's what that video was, hey, I'm with you, I'm on your side. But it was poorly executed because, again, it takes that spotlight away from the black and brown communities and the prejudice they face, and it's refocusing it on the fact that you know something now. And I think that it's a difficult line to walk when you've never walked it before. I'm certainly guilty of it myself. I think that we all are, and being comfortable in that mistake or that ability to make mistakes is an important part of it.
You have to learn from what worked, what didn't work, and then start improving and sharpening and refining your allyship over time.
And then also, I do want to add this aspect to it because it's also important. It's not on marginalized communities to let you know that you failed. It's not on black and brown people to let you know that you made a mistake. It's this constant reflection that you have to go through on a daily basis of being like, okay, in this particular situation, was I intentional? Was I thoughtful? Did I open the space for marginalized people? Did I elevate their voices, or did I take the spotlight away from them? It's a constant process, and it's something that I've struggled with certainly as well.
What do you think about performative allyship? What is performative allyship, and why is that an important distinction to make?
Performative allyship is this sort of superficial notion. Much of what we've been speaking about is this confrontation with history and context, and wanting to show or signal to the Black community in this regard that you're with them, that you understand their history. And that's the extent of it. So what else are you doing? Okay, so these celebrities say, I take responsibility. But what then? What policies are you supporting? Are you there in the trenches protesting alongside marginalized communities? Are you actively taking a role in ending racism in some form or some way? Even if it's monetary support is kind of like a fine line between performative and actual action, because I think that we're so prone in capitalist society to just throw money at the problem. And while it's important to support the Black community monetarily, support Black-owned businesses, there needs to be a discussion as to how you're allocating that, and are you giving money to the proper people and adequately supporting their needs rather than just throwing money at the problem.
Dr. Abraham Kendi, who wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist, it's so loved all over the world right now. I would highly recommend everybody listening right now to go order a copy and wait for that to come. Well, without giving too much away about the book, at the end, he talks about feelings advocacy, which I think can help us understand this performative allyship a bit more, and what feelings advocacy really is. The type of advocacy you're taking and the type of social activism you're pursuing is all about making you feel better. And then once that box is checked and you feel good, well, what really changed except your feelings?
We're so prone in society to just click that button, you know, that Facebook donate now button, to make ourselves feel better about the situation and say that we did something, or to signal to the community that you're a good person. I'm not racist. I'm an ally. But it's only performative in that, like you said, and Dr. Kendi said, that it's only making you feel good. It's not actually fixing the problem or addressing the problem in any sort of meaningful way. You do your deed and then you close the drawer and you move on. You get that gold star, if you will.
And just diversity. A lot of people think, oh, I can go to international night. I can go eat at the Indian restaurant. I can show up at some random event and check my diversity box. No, I'm a good friend to brown and black and international people. But in your day-to-day existence, like, what are you doing? I think a lot of the most important work in social movements happens in daily life. It's not you standing up in the street with a sign in a pretty black outfit taking pictures on Instagram. That is not what it's about. It's you leaving the protests and now you go to home in your house. You're spending time with your family and one of your family members says something racist and you don't let it slide. You continue to be an activist in all the spaces of your life. You don't get to pick and choose, because me, as a brown person, I don't get to pick and choose when I'm brown. No matter where I am, I am.
A lot of performative allyship is being able to switch it off. It's being able to take that allyship costume off and put it in the closet for the next time that struggle happens.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm trying to work with myself and trying to be better at is allyship isn't always showing up when there's a problem. It's not always being there to show up to the protest, but being there just in general. If you support diversity in the protest, if you support representation and you're fighting for these things, then you should be looking at that and constantly evaluating how you're dealing with those in your day-to-day life, even when there's not a perceived threat or problem. It shouldn't take a George Floyd to get you to support Black and brown people.
We should be a little more proactive instead of always being so reactive. James, do you have any last bits of advice or thoughts on the current situation? If there's one thing you want people to know from this conversation, what would it be?
I think that, again, elevating people of color, Black scholarship is important. An individual that I'm starting to learn and research about that I never have known, but she's been a fixture in the Black community for decades, is Angela Yvonne Davis. She is a phenomenal individual that, if you're not aware of her, is she's in the documentary 13th about the 13th Amendment, the militarization of the police force. And she has a whole body of work that is addressing social injustice, addressing police brutality in the prison system. Got a couple of books of hers that I'm reading. So again, as somebody who's talking about this with you, I'm still in the process of learning myself. I'm still finding new information that Black and Brown people have known for decades. And so I think that that's important that you continue that discussion. Like you said, you don't get to check your box and move on. Being an ally is a constant process and a journey of engaging with this on a day-to-day basis and learning as much as you can constantly. So I definitely want to emphasize that. But then also, I have this quote, and somebody that I would recommend following on Twitter is Dr. Sammy Schalk. She says that we all make mistakes, friends, even the woke ones, even the good ones, even the ones who have been at this for years. The difference is we work to own up to it. Every time, stop harm before it spreads. Justice isn't a thing we earn or a place we land. It's a skill we practice. And I think that that's an important thing that myself and other white allies need to understand, is that this is constant work. And it's work that we've put the majority of the burden on the Black and Brown community. And that part of being a white ally is to share that burden with them and to be there, actually be there, not just share a meme on Facebook or click that donate button.
Thank you so much, James, for being here today and sharing your insights with us.
Absolutely. I'm always honored to be here and speak with you.
Always an honor to have you. This is Christoph Kisoon, and you've been listening to Navigating Diversity. James Pasquale and I have been discussing the topics individuality or intersectionality in social activism and allyship, a process, not a destination. Join us next week at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday as we continue to navigate diversity and explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. For more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity.